Coming up on this week's book show, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, New York Times bestselling author and master historian David McCullough rediscovers an important and dramatic chapter in the American story with his latest, The Pioneers, telling the story of the settling of the Northwest Territory. David McCullough on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Two-time Pulitzer Prize winner, New York Times bestselling author and master historian David McCullough rediscovers an important and dramatic chapter in the American story with his latest, The Pioneers. In it, he tells the story of the settling of the Northwest Territory by dauntless pioneers who overcame incredible hardships to build a community based on the ideals that would come to define our country and be known as the American way of life. McCullough received his first Pulitzer for his biography, Truman, and his second for John Adams. He is twice a winner of the National Book Award and has received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest award. The new book is The Pioneers, the historic story of the settlers who brought the American ideal west. It is an honor to welcome David McCullough to this week's book show. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe. It's very good to be back with you.
Always a pleasure to have you and to talk about your work. This is such an amazing story, and I feel like I say this a lot to you, but it's certainly the case in this book. I knew nothing really about this story. Usually if I dive into one of your books on Truman or John Adams, I have some idea and I learn a lot, but this one really I knew little or nothing about this incredibly important period of time. What drew you to it?
Well, I was very much in the state that you are or were. I knew almost nothing about these people. I had somehow never ventured into their story or their experience or the individuals, the remarkable individuals that the book really is about. But I was invited in the year 2004 to give the commencement speech at Ohio University, because it was their 200th anniversary of their founding. The university was the first university west of the Allegheny Mountains. In the course of my preparing for my remarks, I learned that the oldest building on the campus was called Cutler Hall. And I was naturally curious about who Cutler was, found out enough to make me extremely interested to know more. It was a question of good luck, very good luck, and curiosity that led me then to learning about the Northwest Ordinance, which Manasseh Cutler had been the one to put across to Congress, in the year 1787, which was even before we had a constitution or a president. He had never been a lobbyist. They didn't even have the word yet then, but he was a minister, but he was also had the doctoral degrees in medicine and law, so he was three doctoral figures in one. He was minister of the gospel, he was practiced medicine, and practiced law. He was a polymath, much in the manner and ways of Benjamin Franklin. He was also a botanist, maybe the leading American botanist of the time, and he spoke several languages, and he never stopped reading and learning. His honesty, his integrity, his sense of purpose, high purpose, worthy purpose, convince Congress that this Northwest Ordinance idea was a good one. And what he was proposing, he and the others of what was known as the Ohio Company were proposing, is that this vast wilderness empire north and west of the Ohio River, which had been ceded to our country by the British at the end of the Revolution, largely through the diplomatic persuasiveness of John Adams, this large unsettled empire would be based on a law. It had four extremely important policies. One, there would be complete freedom of religion. Two, there would be respect and proper attitude toward the natives who were spread all over the territory, many, many different tribes. There would be public education from grade school through college. No such brave and admirable aspiration had even been attempted as yet in any of the 13 colonies. And finally, and most important of all, there would be no slavery. Now they felt, and this group was all from New England, they felt that it was not enough to say all men are created equal and then have and own the lives of other people, to have slaves. And there were slaves in every one of the original 13 colonies. So they were saying, let's live up to our supposed virtues here. And it passed. Now, five states would be come out of this immense new empire, if you will: Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin. The first to go out, to set the scene, as it were, departed in December of 1787 from what's now called Hamilton, Massachusetts. And they would pave the way, as it were, for the others who would follow.
David McCullough is our guest. The name of the book is The Pioneers. So much of this story really revolves around Rufus Putnam. Tell us about him. Give us a sketch of Rufus Putnam.
General Rufus Putnam, who had served with Washington through the Revolution. And he was really the one that deserves the credit for this project, because the idea was that veterans of the Revolutionary War had been paid in what was known as scrip. It was virtually worthless, worth about 10 cents on the dollar. So the idea was that this land that was now part of the United States of America and was equal in size to all of the original 13 colonies. In other words, the size of our country had been doubled with that one act of Congress. And he led this first group out there. And he was a remarkable man. He had been Washington's civil engineer through much of the war. Virtually all of those who went out were veterans of the Revolutionary War. And their determination, their strength of purpose in the face of, as you said at the start, of adversities such as we can't imagine, is in itself a heroic American story. Every foreseeable adversity imaginable, and then some. Starvation at one point, epidemic diseases that hit, the fact that they had no anesthetics for injuries, they had no chainsaws to cut down the trees. And they didn't go as in the sort of the Daniel Boone kind of pioneer. They went as families. So there were women, men, children. And the sacrifice of life that was appalling at times, children dying of disease, children dying of drowning in the river, and so forth. But they would not give up. Washington has said, perseverance and spirit have worked wonders in all ages. And it's that creed, that perseverance and spirit, that for me is so inspiring.
Tell us about what this ultimately leads to, which is the creation of Marietta, Ohio.
Now, it was named for Marie Antoinette by these veterans because they felt, they were convinced, that Marie Antoinette had been even more influential on her husband, the King of France, then had Benjamin Franklin to bring France into the American Revolution, both with the French army and with a great deal of money. So this was their way of expressing gratitude. History, as you know, teaches us many lessons. The list is long. Two of the lessons that I feel are most important in our reading and knowledge of history are gratitude and empathy, the capacity to put yourself in the other person's place. And when you put yourself in the place of these pioneers and realize what they confronted and what they went through, we're a bunch of softies by comparison. We should have gratitude for all that has been done for our benefit by those who went before us. And we should never take the freedoms and the opportunities and the humanity and rules of decent behavior that have come down to us because of our predecessors.
So you're studying this, and I'm interested in what happens when you get to Marietta. What happens in your research when you get to Marietta?
When I got to Marietta, which is a lovely historic town, still a town, about 14,000 people, and saw the setting, but most importantly, went to the beautiful campus of Marietta College. There, in a beautiful, relatively new library, I came upon a collection of letters and diaries, all written by these pioneers, memoirs, unpublished memoirs, and weather report records, and paintings and drawings, and survey maps, all of that, such as I had never, ever found in one place. Absolutely colossal. Thousands of letters and diaries. And it wasn't just the quantity that was so impressive, but the quality of what was written, the quality of the thinking, the quality of the people. And there were five members of this pioneering group that were particularly well presented, their expressed experiences, sufficient to make the whole book about them. I could have written an entire biography of each of these five characters, each of whom represented a very different part in the episodes that followed. Manessa Cutler being the first, Rufus Putnam, General Putnam, leading the actual group that went out, and then Ephraim Cutler, who was Manessa Cutler's son, and a carpenter who became a very gifted architect named Joseph Barker, and then finally a young doctor named Samuel Hildreth, whose contributions were beyond my imagining. He was not only a marvelous and courageous physician, who made house calls on horseback deep into the woods of the frontier, cared for hundreds of people during epidemics of influenza or smallpox. But he was an historian who was keeping track of all this and published later in his life two biographical collections and histories of the Marietta event, and who also, I discovered, was a very gifted artist, and became a naturalist of real consequence, recognized as one of the leading naturalists, and particularly geologists, of the country. And I have to point out, too, that these people did not come there to keep moving on. They came to stay. They intended to create a community based on fundamental New England values. Among them was no slavery. There's hardly sufficient praise and gratitude to be bestowed on these people for that alone. And the idea that they did create a public school system, they did create a public state college, the beginning of the state college system that we now take for granted, and they didn't move on. If they became prominent in some profession, which several of them did, they didn't move to the big cities of Cleveland or Cincinnati, or go back east to Boston or New York. They stayed there and for the rest of their lives, still striving to create a good community and to take care of their families.
David McCullough is our guest. The name of the new book is The Pioneers. It is published by Simon & Schuster. In writing about Rufus Putnam, you say no one had played so important a role in the creation of the settlement or shown such leadership, perseverance, and strength of character without fail. I would like to ask you about his involvement with Native tribes. The sense of history that he had and wanting to work with the ancient Indian mounds that were found there, and really also in bringing in the brutal part of this story of really the slaughter that took place amongst the pioneers and of course the Native tribes that they found when they arrived.
Well, there were atrocities committed on both sides, no question about it. And many of the pledges that were made by the new incoming pioneers, settlers, were not kept. And there's no doubt that the story of the Native Americans that could be written and has been written and is being studied closely is important, but the people that I've written about had every decent and admirable intention of maintaining respect and peace with the natives, and their experiences, their contact with the natives, is a subject of my. As part of my book about these settlers. But the community at Marietta was never attacked by the Native Americans. There was one small community 30 miles north on the Muskingum River that was struck by a raiding party of Native Americans, and 14 settlers, children, men, one woman, were all slaughtered. But there were also equally atrocious acts committed by white people elsewhere. The great Indian wars, as they were called, that took place hundreds of miles farther west and north. But Rufus Putnam did everything he could have in a reasonable way to keep peace with the Native Americans. And he was always prepared that things might suddenly go very wrong. And there was always fear. We cannot underestimate the fear that existed at that time in that place. A fear of attack, but fear also of wolves and bears and rattlesnakes and accidents and disease and turns in the weather that destroy your crops that you're depending upon, all of that. If we could do it all over again, yes, some of the things that were done could have been better, more reasonable, but that's really not ever possible. There are always heroes out there, and there are always people who are not exactly heroes, and there's always evil. We human beings are human. History is human. History is about people, good and bad, and it has always been so. And even the best of us make mistakes or don't live up to our word. And that's, again, part of what understanding history is about.
David McCullough is our guest. The name of the book is The Pioneers. I'd like to ask you about history and especially your cumulative knowledge. There was something that struck me in the reading of this book, and maybe I'm thinking about it too deeply, I don't know, but it struck me of how many threads of your work seem to come together in this book. Going back to the Johnstown flood of your first book of writing about that region. Of course, you coming from Pittsburgh, you mentioned John Adams, that of the Revolution, even of the greater journey, because you write about the large French population that came in to this new area in Ohio. Of course, Ohio is where the Wright brothers were from. It just seemed that many, many threads seemed to come together in this book.
Well, thank you, Joe. That's exactly my feeling now, and I do see this as a continuing theme in my work. My books are about people who have a worthy purpose in life, an admirable objective they're trying to achieve, and who set out knowing that it wasn't going to be easy, but who had no idea of how bad, how difficult some of the problems that would arise could become. And yet they would not give up. They succeeded. When the builders of the Brooklyn Bridge undertook that colossal, unprecedented attempt of engineering and architectural construction, they had no conception of what they would have to face. But they did not give up. And they did something of great magisterial importance to lift the spirits of all of us. Still to this day, the crowds walking over the Brooklyn Bridge have never been greater than they are now. There's something powerful about that human creation. Panama Canal was the same way. And of course, in their ways, both John Adams and Harry Truman were up against colossal problems, and both addressed them without complaint and succeeded admirably. And the Wright brothers, in many ways, the Wright brothers are raised exactly as these pioneers who came into Ohio in the 18th century were raised. And what they were taught was taught to them mainly by their father, the Reverend Wright. And as in the case of the Brooklyn Bridge story, as in the case of the Wright brothers, and certainly in the case of John Adams, the women in their lives were of utmost importance and essential that we understand the parts that they played in order to understand the role and achievement of the so-called heroes. When Washington Roebling was all but on his last breaths, when he contracted the bends underneath down in the caissons of the Brooklyn Bridge, it was his wife, Emily, who took over. She was really in charge of that project the last few years. Abigail Adams, one of the most admirable Americans ever. And when you read her letters to her husband and to her son, John Quincy, you realize what an immense influence she was on both of those presidents of the United States. The sister of the Wright brothers, Catherine. I don't think the Wright brothers could have achieved the success they did had it not been for her. We need to know much more about them. One of the regrets in this book, this project, is for all the immense first-person accounts and private correspondence of the men, there's very, very little, almost nothing, of the women. In part because many women at that time were illiterate, and also because women were raised, by and large, in New England and elsewhere, not to complain. And they're writing letters back to home, to their families, to their mothers and fathers, and they don't complain about how hard the work is. Imagine you getting up every morning before dawn and working all day well into after dark, to provide food, to cook the meals, to weave the cloth that you make the clothing for maybe 8 or 10 children, and then face all of the complications created by weather and lack of sufficient food and so forth. It is utterly amazing what they succeeded in doing. And I think, too, that The love of learning is a big part of this Ohio story. And hard work, not just hard work for the women and men, but for the children as well. Everybody worked. It was essential for survival. And they're brought up with so many of the virtues and values that we so desperately need now. To be honest, to make yourself useful. They were taught that modesty was a good thing. Don't get too big for your britches. Decency, kindness, hard work, and worthy purpose in life. These people were not out there doing what they did to become rich or to become famous or to have a lot of expensive show-off possessions. No. And they were there to make it a better world as best they could. And isn't it amazing, Joe, to think that the first human beings to fly in an airplane that they built, the first human being to circle the Earth, and the first human being to put his feet on the moon, the Wright brothers, John Glenn and Neil Armstrong, all came from the same section of Ohio. I don't know. Maybe it's something in the water. I don't know. There isn't a clear explanation, but it's a phenomenon that I think is worth considering. All I knew about Wilbur and Orville Wright was what I learned maybe in 15 minutes about the Wright brothers in the high school history class. I had no idea until I happened upon some letters written by Wilbur Wright from France back to his sister in Dayton and to his father, wherein he's going to the Louvre Museum at every chance to look at the paintings, or he's going to the great cathedrals to walk in to see that spectacular architecture and the lifting of the eyes up to the sky and the lighting in the upper reaches of the inside of the cathedrals. Of course, it's all same thing as reaching for the sky, literally, if you're trying to build an airplane. And I thought, there's a much more to this man than anybody has said. He wasn't just a clever bicycle builder. And when you really dig into the research on past characters, you get to know them in many ways better than you know people in real life, because for one thing, in real life, you don't get to read other people's mail.
Well, the book is just beautiful and so important. It is the pioneers, the heroic story of the settlers who brought the American ideal west. It is published by Simon & Schuster. David McCullough, it's always such a pleasure and an honor to speak to you. I thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, I greatly appreciate the chance to talk with you, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, David McCullough is the author of The Pioneers, the heroic story of the settlers who brought the American ideal west. The book is published by Simon & Schuster. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.